Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And as always, welcome back. So good to have you with us again as we explore an exciting world, the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Today, we're going to go to Taiwan, and we're going to visit with our dear friend, Dr. Daxuan Feng, a guest we've had on this program several times in our program's existence. Always a very fascinating study, Dr. Feng. He has recently accepted the position of Vice President of National Tsinghua University in Taiwan. And incidentally, it's spelled T-S-I-N-G-H-U-A. And I have a tendency to pronounce it the way the Vietnamese pronounced H-U-A, as way instead of wa, so I'm sure I'll be caught on that one. Dr. Feng has got some fascinating things to tell us about how the National Tsinghua University in Taiwan is related very, very closely to the National Tsinghua University in Beijing, China, and how it goes back years and years and years, and it's a really, really fascinating study. And he's got some other interesting things to tell us, too, about the powerhouse that is going on in that part of the world with all these countries in Asia-Pacific coming together to form a powerhouse in an economic trade. So we're going to talk about that. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. Today we're going to ask the spirit of the fountain a question on space exploration. See how his memory is on that, all the way back to 1965. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. I have been asked to remind you, before we get started here, of the Homeland Security Conference sponsored by Raytheon and produced by IEEE that's going to go on November 15th through the 17th in Boston, Massachusetts. This is a major conference. So that's coming up on November 15th, 17th in Boston. You can find more information at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, on the right-hand side of your screen. Well, let's get now to our interview with Dr. Daxuan Feng. We called him at 8 o'clock at night a couple of days ago because it was the following morning in Taiwan. And this is how it went. Good morning, Dr. Feng. This is Colonel Mason. This is Colonel Mason calling from Dallas. Did we get you at a good time?
It's perfect.
Oh, that's wonderful. Did we catch you at the university or are you at your house?
This is my house because after we're done, I have to rush to the Ministry of Education.
Okay.
Discussion. So that's why I'm here.
All right, fine. Are you in Taipei?
No, I'm in Hsinchu, the science park.
Oh, Hsinchu. Okay, that's good. Well, it's been really exciting ever since we heard that you accepted the post of Vice President of National Tsinghua University. Yeah, Tsinghua, you pronounce it. Tsinghua, okay.
Yes.
Now, I understand that there's also a National Tsinghua University in the mainland, isn't there?
Tsinghua is a name that permeates probably the entire Chinese, global Chinese community because of the profound importance of both universities in Beijing and here in Taiwan.
So they're related, I guess.
Name, they have exactly the same name, the same emblem, the same anthem, and so on.
Tsinghua University is a top university in Taiwan, and it's had a long association with the university on the mainland, too?
Well, I can You want to tell now, talk now, or you want to do it formally? Because I can tell this is a fascinating story, which will probably define how the mainland and Taiwan move together in the 21st century.
Well, that's wonderful. Yes, we're rolling. So let's get into it right now and talk about it.
Well, let me give you a very quick synopsis of how Tsinghua came about.
Okay.
Because it actually has something to do with the United States.
All right.
As you may or may not know, the history of China, there was a so-called Boxer Rebellion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
In the beginning of the 20th century, before the Qing Dynasty was before the Qing Dynasty collapsed. And so eight nations, including the United States, whose properties in China were severely burned down or destroyed, asked the Chinese government for reparation money. And so the Chinese government actually, the Qing Dynasty, actually gave a huge amount of reparation funds back to the eight countries. Now, of the eight countries, the only one that seems to have any conscience at all was the United States, who recognized that the way they asked for the reparation money is as asked all the businessmen to say, how much have you lost? And they will claim from the Chinese government.
Okay.
Well, they found out very quickly that many of the businessmen overcharged. Not by a little bit, by a huge amount.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what is the ratio. I can imagine, you know, if you lost a dollar, you may claim 10. Anyway, so the American government realized that they were on their hands. There were a lot of money that really didn't belong to them.
Okay.
So what they did was, instead of returning the money back to China, which at that point was, the government was very close to collapse, they decided to set up a preparatory school to select the brightest students from China to come to study in the United States.
Okay. Right.
And the preparatory school was selected at a site called the Tsinghua Garden in Beijing.
All right.
And so that's what the original name called Tsinghua Preparatory College. And some of the most important intellectual leaders of the 20th century were selected with that scholarship, eventually came to the United States and returned to China and made huge transformation of Chinese intellectual and economic transformation for the next 100 years. So that's how Tsinghua started.
Well, what happened during the Great March and the Great Rebellion back in the 40s? Was there some disruption there, or did the university continue on as it did?
Well, I will continue. By 1926, the Tsinghua College handed to by then the Republic of China government.
Yeah.
The new republic that was formed in 1911. So, by the way, that means Tsinghua and the republic was formed on the same year.
Okay.
So by 1926, it became what is called the National Tsinghua University.
Mm-hmm.
And by 1938, the president is a gentleman called Mei Yiqi, M-E-I-Y-I-Q-I, Mei Yiqi, and he ruled the university from 1937 until 1946.
Okay.
Which, by the way, included the 1938 to 1945 year of what China called the Year of Resistance, namely the Japanese aggression.
Oh, yeah, and the rape of Nanking and everything else happened during that time, right.
Now, during those eight years, the university, together with Peking University and another university in Tianjin called Nankai University, moved to Yunnan province, which is in the southern part, of far away from the front lines.
Mm-hmm.
And became what is called the National Southwestern Union University. And during those 8 years, the university was actually run by a tripartite of three presidents of the three universities. But the other two presidents were so busy with the government in Sichuan province, so the only person that actually ran the university was the one from Tsinghua. So Mr. May actually ran the university during that period. It was a very difficult period, but amazingly, it produces some of the most amazing intellects of the 20th century, which included the two Nobel laureates of 1957. Professor Li and Yang, both at that time were already staying at the Princeton Institute for Advanced Studies, Stony Brook, and Columbia University. So by 1949, China was took over by the communists. So Tsinghua University at that point actually reorganized. So they kept all the engineering school and sent everything else away from other universities. In 1956, Mr. May was asked by Chiang Kai-shek to come to Taiwan to set up the Tsinghua University right here.
Ooh.
And of course, the funding from the Boxer Rebellion moved with him to the Taiwan College. And so the money that actually started this campus here also came partly from the money of the Boxer Rebellion, paid to the American government, repaid to the Chinese.
Well, that's because we recognize the Chiang Kai-shek as being the legitimate government of China and not Mao Zedong, is that right?
That's right. So 1956 to 1962, the president was Dr. May. And his legacy, his importance was so deep in both the original Tsinghua and the Tsinghua in Hsinchu, and actually even the Tsinghua after China, because most of the people who stayed on in China after 1949 were either his students or his colleagues and so on. They remembered him with great fondness. So even today, Mr. May is regarded as the eternal president of both Beijing Tsinghua and Hsinchu Tsinghua. So now with Tsinghua in Beijing becoming the most important university in mainland China. Wow. As you probably know, Hu Jintao, the president now, mm-hmm. was a graduate of Tsinghua University. The next president, whom Biden has just met, the vice deputy chairman at the moment, Mr. Xi, is also a Tsinghua graduate.
Wow.
So you can see the Tsinghua influence in mainland China is profound, deep, and ubiquitous. And here in Taiwan, Tsinghua has become the heart of the entire Taiwan economic miracle, because surrounding us is the Industrial Technology Research Institute, or called ITRI, ITRI, which has about 6,000 people working in it, linking technology with commercialization. The right next to us, within walking distance from the university, is the National Center for Synchrotron Radiation Facility. If you want to do anything, the highest quality of X-ray crystallography of either molecular biology or chips development, you will have to use this facility. It is the so-called the third generation synchrotron radiation facility. And also next to us, within walking distance, is the National Nanotech Facility Center, mm-hmm. and the National Center for High Performance Computing.
Wow.
And so on and so forth. And of course, right next to all this are the industrial giants such as Taiwan Semiconductors, TSMC, and so on and so forth. So you can see that both Beijing Tsinghua and the Taiwan Tsinghua are really joined at the hips, so to speak. And we also have joint degree programs now, just started. This year we'll actually have students taking both degrees from both campuses. We're going back and forth a lot. We also just celebrated the centennial together on April 23rd, and so on and so forth.
That's a fascinating history, Dr. Feng, and something that I'm sure a few of us do anything about. Of course, leading way back to the Boxer Rebellion, that sort of tie-in is completely new to many of us. And we see then there's a sharing that's going on between the university in Taiwan and the same university in Beijing. Is that right? You're all holding hands.
What tells me, Colonel, is that whenever we think of the political and the economic and intellectual landscape, we have to add a very, very important dimension to it, which people tend not to do because we are short-sighted and we have short memories. We have to add in the whole historical background. Because only then can you understand how it came about. And only then can you have a good idea how the future may be formed. If you forget history, it's very hard to project the future.
Yes, I can well understand that. Now, you're talking about the history of the feeling that, as you told me last time we spoke, that the people in Taiwan really believe that they are Chinese, and they don't see the separation, and it's unlikely that the mainland will come and invade Taiwan, because they would look kind of like to just to keep it part of China the way they brought back Hong Kong. Is that the point?
No, I don't think. I don't think Taiwan view itself as another Hong Kong. Taiwan is very different from Hong Kong in the sense that, in reality, Taiwan has its own government. Taiwan has its own government that does not take orders from anyone, at least not directly. Taiwan has its own military. Taiwan has its own ministries, from finance to education, whatever. And so in many ways Taiwan is already functioning as an independent quote unquote state. Now, and in fact, I find it very interesting that, for example, Taiwan has just worked out a deal with the European Union that I think most of the European Union now would allow Taiwan citizens to visit without visas, and they will come also without visas.
Mm.
So you see that in many ways Taiwan is functioning as an independent quote unquote state. Now, but on the other hand, both mainland and China now has a very interesting history that was developed in the last 20 years, and that is the so-called 9-2 Common Understanding.
All right.
The 9-2 Common Understanding was developed in 1992, so that's why it's called the 9-2.
Uh-huh.
The 9-2 Common Understanding is that they recognize, both sides recognize that they are Chinese.
Okay.
Both sides say that they define for themselves what China is.
All right.
So in other words, China will define, mainland China will define China as the People's Republic of China as the government. Taiwan will define China as the Republic of China as the government. Now, actually, it's very interesting because we're going to have an election coming up, and the opposition now in Taiwan is just announced yesterday that they do not recognize the 9-2 Common Understanding.
Oh.
And so that is a lot of political discussions here, and you can imagine that there is all kinds of political. It's just like the U.S. now, as you can see. Whenever you have elections coming up, the rhetoric tends to be very, very strong.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, you know, but by and large, you can see that the interaction between Asia Pacific countries and Taiwan and so on are really going on at a level that I have never seen before.
Well, what does this really bode for the relationship then, if they can't agree on this 9-2 thing that you were just talking about? How's that going to change things?
Well, I think what we will see is, for the foreseeable future, nothing will change.
Okay.
And it will just continue on with lots and lots of economic development, lots and lots of people interaction. For example, there are now direct flights from Taiwan to mainland and mainland to Taiwan, something of the order of 100 flights a week, back and forth, to many, many, many cities in mainland China.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, you have to look at also a greater context, not just Taiwan and mainland China, because the entire Asia-Pacific is what I'm going to use a new word, is going to defragmentize. They're going to defragmentize economically. They're going to defragmentize geographically. And let me explain to you what that means.
All right.
Economically, I don't know whether you heard of the term 10 plus 1 or not. Mm. Have you heard of that?
No. Bring me up to date on that.
All right. 10 are the 10 nations in the Association for Southeast Asian Nations, which include Burma, or now called Myanmar, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, Brunei, Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, and one more, I cannot remember. But anyway, 10 of them. These 10 nations form what... Oh, Singapore, of course.
Okay, yeah.
These 10 nations form what is called the Association for Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN. The 10 plus 1, the 1 is mainland China, the People's Republic of China. So, on October of 2010, I don't know whether people in the United States know this or not, 10 plus 1 has become a free trade zone. The 600 million people in the Southeast Asian nations and the 1.3 billion people in China have become a free trade zone.
Now, free trade zone, you mean where you trade freely with each other on an equal basis in a common currency like the European Union?
Yeah, just like the way the United States is negotiating free trade with many other countries.
Wow.
This, to me, is the economic defragmentization. And also, under intense discussion now, is to become 10 plus 3. 10 plus 3 means Japan and South Korea adding into this list. So within the next decade, South Korea has about 60 million people, and Japan has about 120 million people. So basically, by another 10, 20 years, this 2 billion people on Earth, which is about one-third of the world's population, will be totally as a free trade zone. This, to me, is what is known as the defragmentization of economics.
So it isn't just China, the great economic leader. Oh, okay. So the economic unity between 10 Asia-Pacific countries, Burma, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, Brunei, Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, and Singapore is adding China as a powerhouse. And now the talk is to add Japan and South Korea. Wow. Well, of course, that begs the question of where does that leave North Korea? And that's a question that we plan to ask Dr. Deshwin Feng when we return in the second half. So stick with us. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today? Ooh, look at this. From out of the past, it's Patrick Henry.
If we wish to be free, if we mean to preserve and violate those inestimable privileges for which we have been so long contending, if we mean not basely to abandon the noble struggle in which we have been so long engaged, and which we have pledged ourselves never to abandon until the glorious object of our contest shall be obtained, we must fight. I repeat it, sir, we must fight. Why stand we here idle? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death!